Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EP. And if you're not already connected with us on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today we're speaking with Mr. Brian T. Bradley, Esquire, the Senior Managing Partner of Bradley Legal Corp., an asset protection attorney for high net worth families and individuals, entrepreneurs, real estate investors, and ultra high net worth families. Mr. Bradley, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks, Eric, for having me on and putting a podcast together. You know, I really love, you know, your Metallica Enter Sandman intro to your show. It always pumps me up. And I hope that the concepts and the key principles that we're going to go over today help your listeners on their journey.
Well, can't thank you enough for being a part of this show as a listener as well. That's pretty sweet. And thanks for the kind words as well. And I'm sure you have a lot to offer the audience per your expertise as well. So let's get started. Tell us, what is asset protection? Let's start there today.
Yeah, it's a great question. Asset protection isn't traditional estate planning. It's modern estate planning. And what we're essentially doing is placing a legal barrier between your assets and your potential creditors before it's needed. You know, it's that simple. It's just like a barrier, like a safe for your gold or your guns or your other valuables that you put those into. Anything of value like assets or ownership shares of businesses, you want to put behind a legal barrier and out of your personal name so that it's not easily attached to with a lien or reached or attacked with a lawsuit.
Certainly makes sense per your explanation. And what has actually changed in the legal system over the last, say, 30 years to make asset protection so important today?
Yeah, so what you're able to do, you know, about 30, 40 years ago, you know, especially if you have an older mindset, you just can't get away with today. You know, one, we weren't as a litigious society as we are today. You know, like we have more than 40 million lawsuits filed every year in the U.S. and something about 99.9% of all the lawsuits of the world are filed in the U.S. It's become a billion-dollar with the B, $300 billion business. There's a lot of predatory lawsuits just from plaintiffs trying to file, you know, a lawsuit against a perceived have or someone with a big target just to get a payday. And this is partly because in the 60s and 70s, when you had the Supreme Court allow for law firm advertising and contingency fee lawyers, it opened up the floodgate for people that have no skin in the game to come in and file a lawsuit looking to get a payday against somebody who's a target. And then we don't have a payer, you know, win system. So meaning if you lose your lawsuit, you don't have to pay for the cost. So there's no downside for someone trying to file a lawsuit to get into your assets. And so this stuff didn't happen 30 or 40 years ago. 30 or 40 years ago, you can put your assets into a living trust and not have to worry about really the amount of lawsuits attacking you. Nowadays, revocable living trust isn't going to protect you at all. They're not designed to. They're only designed to, you know, avoid probate, decrease death taxes, and they only go into effect when you die. So what happens when you're being sued or something bad happens or negligent happens while you're living? How do we protect what you built, your legacy, and what you're going to pass on or retire on now?
Certainly is amazing what you just told us here, and it's no surprise, but over the last 30 years, how the legal system has changed and the reasons behind it. Good information there. Now, what is the difference between a single-member LLC and a multi-member LLC when it comes to asset protection?
Yeah, so I was going to, like, LLCs are great. I like LLCs. You know, you're going to probably hear, like, me talk about how they're just basic entry level. But the single-member LLC is just, you know, like you, Eric, you're named as the member managing person of that firm, of that LLC. The problem generally is that most clients are going to come to me with, like, when it comes to asset protection, you're owning it in your personal name, you as the member. The problem is that courts have a tendency to disregard single-member LLCs. They're basically worthless. So what you want is, if you're going to have a single-member LLC, is for that single-member LLC to be held by a multi-member limited partnership. And by doing this, what you're now doing is properly layering your protection system, and we're taking away a legal argument. It's good when you have a single-member LLC as a holding company, as a single member, because it'll help with the taxes and the IRS filings, those K-1s that you have to file every year. you want it to be passive if you're using a secondary tier layer like a limited partnership, because those K-1s will just flow through that limited partnership. So you're only going to have one tax filing. If you don't layer it like this, it's going to get crazy in the sense of, let's say you have 15 assets and you have 15 LLCs. Now you're going to be paying a lot of maintenance and annual cost on that. LLCs say it in the beginning of their name, limited. There's no silver bullet there. They're just basic entry-level protection. So as you scale up, you want to make sure that those K-1s flow into something else to simplify your tax filing. And you want that to be a multi-member entity where a bridge trust or an asset protection trust can own that limited partnership. And then you can just be named as a managing member of it, or better yet, an operating company can be. But the idea is just get your personal name off the asset, have a business entity own it, and then start adding more multiple layers to the protection system.
Yeah, I really appreciate your breaking that down. That is helpful today. We're joined by Mr. Brian T. Bradley, Esquire, the Senior Managing Partner of Bradley Legal Corp., an asset protection attorney. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, working in association with the Legal Corner, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, tell us, what is it that you are really protecting? Is it gross value or net value?
It's gross value. That's what we're really... Well, net value, like gross, I think is more for vanity. You know, like there's a saying, gross is vanity, cash is king. The issue with this is that when clients call in and they say like, oh, I make $100 million net, gross value. That's not their net value. What they're saying is that's how much I'm taking in, but that might not be how much that we have to protect. It can be tied up in a lot of different areas. What we want to protect is what somebody has access to. If I'm going to sue you, how much am I going to get from that right away? And so when a client calls in and they have, 10 properties, they're heavily mortgaged, you're not really going to be a good mark for a lawsuit, because the banks that have those mortgages are going to be in a higher priority of anybody who's suing you. So in that case, those mortgages work in your favor. But let's say you have a lot of equity in all of those homes. Let's say you have, 10 properties and $1 million worth of equity. We actually want to start protecting that equity, because that can actually get taken from you in a judgment. And so what we're trying to protect is what the net value, your actual, money that you make minus, your mortgages and your debt. And so that's really what we care about at that time, is just how much net do you actually have that someone can get.
And definitely some bonus information right there. Thanks for that. Now, what is an asset protection trust, and what's the difference between domestic and foreign trust?
Yeah, that's really where, the big crux of asset protection comes into is, the higher levels when you really are concerned about protection is, what are these trusts? How do we use them? Where do we use them at? And the best starting point is just to go over jurisdiction. When it's really bad outside, you're in the frozen tundra, Siberia or something, think about it. You're in the middle of winter and something bad is going to happen. This is your outer layer shell, your outer weather, cold weather jacket. What jurisdiction means is that what the laws and rules that govern like you, lawsuits, your assets are going to be different from one country to another, one state to another, one county to another. And so you have two options. You can create them here in the U.S. or you can create them offshores in another country like the Cook Islands. For a quick historical context of it, the offshore came first in about 1984. In the Cook Islands, they created the Asset Protection Trust. I prefer the Cook Islands Foreign Asset Protection Trust just because it's so strong and offers the best home court advantage. And the power that they offer is what's called statutory non-recognition. That's why it's still the global gold standard over 40 years. What this means is that a U.S. judgment or a judgment anywhere in the world is completely worthless in the Cook Islands. They'd have to start their case all over from scratch, facing the murder standard, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. They have to front all the court costs, fly in a judge from New Zealand. You can't take your U.S. attorneys there. There's no contingency fee lawyers. There's only a one-year statute of limitations. So it makes it virtually impossible to win a judgment against you. And if they lose, they pay. But for most people, it's kind of overkill. They're very expensive, and there's a lot of IRS filings that have to be and disclosures that people need to make for those. So what we see is a lot of people just doing the cost analysis of it and the IRS hurdles choose to just go domestically. The domestic came next. They came about 10 years after the Cook Islands started in Alaska. And then obviously, Wyoming, Delaware, Nevada are going to follow suit right away, which they did. And now about 20 different states have asset protection statutes. But the problem is that, you know, purely domestic asset protection trusts, they fail on effectiveness because of the U.S. Constitution, the full faith and credit clause. You can't run from judgments. You know, every state has to honor another state's judgments. And so now we're seeing a pattern of domestic asset protection trusts being pierced. We have states like California saying, well, we don't have asset protection trusts. We don't have that legislation. You're a California resident. We're not going to recognize you going to Nevada and getting a Nevada asset protection trust. Too bad that's not going to work for you. So you just created a false sense of security. So that's why I'm not a big fan of anything that's purely domestic, simply because you don't have, you know, the power and strength of statutory non-recognition in your back pocket. I prefer being able to do a hybrid because you kind of get the best of both worlds. And it's called the Bridge Trust. This came in about 30 years ago. So it's been around for a while as well and tested in court. A Bridge Trust is an irrevocable tax neutral grantor trust. It's an asset protection trust. It's called a self-settled spendthrift trust. It's meaning it's by you, for you, as your own beneficiary. And the benefit of it is that even though it's a purely foreign asset protection trust registered from day one with an offshore trustee, the U.S. government, the IRS, classify it as a domestic trust because it's in compliance with USC section 7701. So as long as we stay in compliance with that, it's going to be easier to maintain, cheaper to maintain, cheaper on cost. It's going to be efficient. And then you maintain that very, very strong statutory non-recognition in your back pocket if and when you need it. Because if we ever have to trigger the bridge and cross the bridge, we just drop the U.S. compliance with 7701. You're no longer a domestic asset protection trust. Now you're purely foreign. And so that's where when you get sued and we have to trigger the clause, we can literally say, we don't care what you get. We don't care if you get a $10 million judgment against us. You're never going to get a penny. We just migrated across to the Cook Islands. And so that's where you get the best of both worlds. You don't need to be purely foreign and you shouldn't be purely foreign until you need to be there. But you should at least have that tool in your pocket when you get to about $1 million net worth, just in case you need it.
Mr. Bradley, eye-opening information shared here today. Can't thank you enough for what you do and for informing as well here today for the time spent. Before you go, any conclusion, any closing thoughts, a takeaway, a tip, or anything else you'd like to share along the lines of our conversation today?
Yeah, I just say as you start building, you know, there's different layers. You know, if you're starting out, start out with an LLC. Just realize there's a limit. Like, it's in its name. You know, you can scale your system up as you grow. You know, start with an LLC. As you get to about $500,000 net worth, add that limited management partnership, you know, into the mix to own those LLCs that own your investments and your corporate shares. As you get to that $1 million mark, then you need to start thinking about, okay, I need a trust. You know, where do I want to do this? Do I want a bridge trust? It's scalable as you grow. You're going to, wherever you start isn't where you're going to end up. Don't try to do this on your own. You're going to fail. You know, it's not like creating a business. This is what the experts are for. Use your experts and just realize where you start's not where you're going to end. So your system needs to be flexible and it needs to grow as you do and give you more options. You don't want to be put in a corner when it comes into asset protection.
And isn't that the truth? Well stated. And thanks so much for joining us here today. I'm sure listeners want to know how they can connect with you and get more information on Bradley Legal Corp. Where's the best place to do so?
Yeah, they can jump on my website, www.btblegal.com. A lot of educational information, a lot of educational videos, and investment summit presentations that we put on there for people to learn. They can email me, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at btblegal.com. You know, it's all about education, you know, for me on this. Too many people just are too afraid to talk to the experts because they're afraid of, you know, the hourly rate or the, you know, initial consultation while they shop around. I do free consultations because I'd rather have people just have access to information to make educated decisions and not just rely on Google.
Bullseye on that. Thanks so much, Mr. Bradley, for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Certainly was our pleasure. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
Again, we've been speaking with Mr. Brian T. Bradley, Esquire, the Senior Managing Partner of Bradley Legal Corp., an asset protection attorney for high net worth families and individuals, entrepreneurs, real estate investors, and also ultra high net worth families. And for more information and for contact, visit btblegal.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.